Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but it turns out therapy has some difficulties of its own: finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online, convenient, and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your own home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's betterhelp.com.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm Claudia Hammond, and a very warm welcome to The Evidence from the BBC. Now, The Evidence is produced in collaboration with Wellcome Collection, and in each episode, we take a health issue and we unpick the science, looking at the latest evidence to work out what's going on. Now, today, I'm with a live audience at the Malawi-Liverpool Wellcome Research Programme, which is a research institute in Blantyre, Malawi, to discuss mothers and childbirth. Now, it is wonderful to be here, and since we're in Malawi, I am, of course, going to start off by greeting everyone. I've been learning this. Moni Nonse. Muli Bwanji. Buinu Zikamo, everyone. How was that? Was that any good? Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to start by asking all of you here in the audience a question. Can you please cheer if you're a mother? Well done. Congratulations, quite a few of you. Now, though, I'd like people here to cheer if you know someone who's had a baby. If you know anyone at all who's had a baby, please cheer. Oh, I think that's safe to say that that is everyone in the room. And I would bet that everyone in our audience listening to this show around the world also knows someone who has been pregnant or given birth, which just goes to show how important this issue of maternal health is. Because while having a baby can be, of course, a very joyful event, it can also be complicated and sometimes dangerous for the mother and for the baby. But today, we're going to discuss how to make it safer, and my panel is ideally placed to do that. Dr. Linda Nyondo-Mapando is a registered midwife and associate professor of health systems and policy at both the University of Liverpool in the UK and Kamuzu University of Health Sciences here in Malawi. Now, welcome, Linda. You've got a long title, but would it be fair to say that what you're doing in practice is researching the best ways of making childbirth safer for mothers and their babies? Is that a good description?
Yes, that's a good description. Sure.
And Dr. Owen Chikwaza is an obstetrician and gynaecologist and deputy director of reproductive health services at the Ministry of Health. So in practice, Owen, what does that mean? What does your work look like day to day?
Thank you, Claudia. So for my job as a deputy director, our job really is to coordinate all the reproductive health services in the country. And also we provide policy guidance to government and also to all the players, all the stakeholders in reproductive health. And on the hospital, I work like any other specialist looking after women and babies.
Thank you for that. Now, Elimazi Kamanga-Gama is a registered midwife and the executive director of the White Ribbon Alliance in Malawi, which is an organisation focused on ending maternal mortality. I'd love to know what led you to become a midwife.
Oh, thank you, Claudia. Indeed, I'm Elimazi Kamanga, Mrs. Gama. I grew up a very poor girl in a village, Kaninga village in Kasungu, Tie Kaomba. Growing up, I never inspired to become a midwife because law models that time were not available. So the people that would see as role models were teachers. The rest were farmers and were just one of them and just subsistence farming, where you don't make any profit. Going to school was just going for the sake of going, just like any other child would go to school. I was never asked by my parents, nor the teachers or anyone around as to what I would want to become when I grew up. But one day, I came across book series, very small books, titled Eta Becomes a Nurse. So when I read it, I saw this Eta, very inspiring, the way she journeyed to become a nurse midwife. She was very passionate, the way she was treating the patients, and the way the patients liked her, that they would surround her to be the one that should treat them, that should help them. So all that, when I pictured it, I imagined myself being one. So I made sure that I put Camus College of Nursing as my top choice for the university. And God being God, I became selected. And I made sure that nothing had to stop me from becoming a nurse midwife. And the remarks that Eta was receiving whilst she was working, I started receiving them when I was a student. Yeah, so that now I graduated, I really wanted to be the Eta that I read about.
And you became Eta in the end. You became a nurse midwife.
I became a nurse midwife.
Now, earlier, I asked those of you in our audience here to cheer if you knew someone who'd had a baby, and everyone did, but sadly, things don't always go to plan. So could you stamp on the floor for me if you know someone who had problems with their pregnancy or with having a baby? Quite a few of you there, and this is, of course, a global problem. In 2000, for example, it was estimated that 446,000 women died due to pregnancy or giving birth. Now, this is an issue I've been following for almost two decades for the BBC, and I can remember saying in the past that this is the equivalent of the largest jumbo jet full of women dying not once, but every single day. Now, I'm happy to say that things have improved somewhat in the last 20 years and more women now do survive childbirth. But there are also a billion more people in the world. And so although pregnancy and childbirth have become safer, the equivalent of a jumbo jet full of women still die every day. Now, Linda, I wonder what progress have you seen here in Malawi?
So I think in terms of maternal deaths, Malawi has made progress but also retrograded in some spaces. So I say that because when you look at the maternal mortality ratio for Malawi, we're making good progress. We're at 349, but our recent statistics show that we've got 381 mothers dying out of every 100,000 births.
And how would that compare with other countries in sub-Saharan Africa or other neighbouring countries? Are you kind of doing better or worse or the same?
So when you look through our neighbouring countries, Malawi is performing poorly because when you consider our neighbouring countries like Zambia, Mozambique, their rates are below 200, whilst ours is about 381. So we're quite having the highest, and maybe same like Lesotho as well.
And what sort of impact did COVID have on the levels? Did that make a difference?
I think COVID has got a play in it. During the time of COVID, in one of our studies, what we found was that there were so many rumors at the time of COVID that if you go to the hospital, you're going to be somewhere, somehow told that you have COVID. So that also made people to stay away in some of the services. Plus, also, when you think of COVID, it also meant that the resources, most resources were directed towards COVID, which could have led to an imbalance of the resources that were available and led for the other conditions as well.
And you gave us the numbers there, and of course, behind those numbers are people. So, Elimazi, can you tell us a bit more about what pregnancy and childbirth look like in Malawi? What would typically happen?
Yeah, so it depends on the location where you are. So most people, they live in the rural community. So the journey kind of differs. So there are systems in place that would allow the pregnant woman to be able to access antenatal care services. But you find that most of the times, it's less than 30% in the country that are able to access antenatal care within the first trimester. Sometimes you find that what's challenging them are the geographical location, distances to the health facilities. You find that many people, they live outside the 8-kilometer radius. So they live very far from the facilities, and they consider themselves to be fine. They're not sick. It's different to when you're sick and then you, what you want to see by the end of the day is the drugs and then you get better. But with pregnancy, people feel they are okay, so they can go anytime later. And also the cultural beliefs, they believe that you, when the pregnancy is not showing up, then it's not proper for one to go to a health facility. Because then even fellow women, they'll be saying, oh, but then you really liked to be pregnant. So now that you are even just 1 month, you want to go to the clinic, what will the midwife find on your abdomen? So some kind of those talks, they tend to deter women from attending antenatal in the first trimester.
And what about when it comes to giving birth? Where would most women do that?
So most women will deliver, because of the population, like 80% will deliver at a health center. So a health center, it has some level of skills, but the most of the skills are missing, like the ones that you find at a district hospital. The supplies and even the infrastructure is also kind of limited. So when you develop a complication whilst giving birth, it requires that you be moved to a now a higher level facility. It requires transportation. The roads are not good. They're very difficult. And the ambulances to transfer the women when they have developed a complication, you find that they are, most districts, they're really suffering. They don't have adequate ambulances. So women sometimes end up being put in a vehicle by a family together with several other travelers. And you are in labor with all the pains, and then you're groaning with all other women. So that kind of experience is not dignified to the women.
Yes, that must be a very, very difficult experience. And of course, sometimes it all goes wrong as well, and it can go very wrong. Can I ask you, Owen, what sort of things you've seen happen on the ground? Is there a case that has stayed with you?
Yes, a lot of them through my practice. But I think the one that is just coming through my mind just now is a case that happened just over the Easter. A woman came, a young woman, 20 years old. So she presented to Waira Hospital. It's like a district hospital very close to Kamu Central Hospital in Lilongwe. So she presented there with a history of having miscarried. So they took her for cleaning up. And in the evening, she started deteriorating very fast. Fever and also confused. And blood pressure started to drop. And they referred her to our center. The team thought maybe she was miscarrying. She was trying to induce a miscarriage, and I think maybe she used wrong things, maybe at home. And so at this point, she had infection, like sepsis. So the whole body was, it was set in at that point. So they stabilized her and took her to theater. They removed the uterus, but from there she didn't wake up from theatre, so she was admitted in ICU. Every time I'm sitting at the ministry, I'm thinking the best case scenario is that she wakes up, she recovers from that, and the worst case scenario is that she dies. So if she wakes up, she's only 20, no living child, no uterus, she'll never have children of her own. And if she dies, then the family has lost a relative. And this story is not very long time ago. I'm talking about last weekend.
Yeah, and so I can imagine why that would stay with you, and you'd be wondering what might.
This is not the only. There are a lot of them. So yeah. Another story, now a successful one. Maybe this is so gloomy. So the same weekend. So there's a woman who was delivering at a private hospital called ABC, and then she was referred to our center because just after bleeding, after delivering, she started bleeding and they couldn't control the bleeding. So they sent her to our center. So and then the doctor who was attending, my junior doctors who were attending, they called me and they took her in and they sorted out the bleeding at that point. She stopped bleeding. But something was just telling me that you just need to go and check that woman out. I went to the ward, and she was confused, restless. I decided to take her to the HDU, to the intensive care place. So we admitted her there, and around midnight, they called me that the BP, blood pressure, just crashed. And I rushed there. We took her in theater. We realized that she had ruptured the uterus. She already had like 4 living children, so we couldn't labor to try and keep the uterus, because in so doing, we could even have lost her. So we took off the uterus. She was discharged. And I received a phone call like 3-4 days later from the husband telling me that she had left fuel, diesel, at the gas station for me as a thank you for saving her wife, definitely. So it was encouraging. So that's what keeps us going. So there'll be those sad stories, and there'll be those success stories like this one. So yeah.
And so recently, yes. Yeah. So thank you for those. And Linda, how do the individual stories fit in with what the data can tell us? What are the most common causes of maternal death nowadays in Malawi?
Okay, so the commonest causes of maternal death currently in Malawi are sepsis. So the scenario that Owen just described now alludes more to sepsis. The first one alludes more to sepsis. So that is the major killer, accounting for about 25% of the maternal deaths that we observed. And need to say that for Malawi, I think we are grouping all kinds of infections into one. We are not disaggregating them. Second of all is hemorrhage, postpartum hemorrhage, a similar case that Owen also shared. So we're seeing a lot of postpartum hemorrhage, and those are also leading to death. I think the interesting thing with his case was that they had immediate transportation to move them from one facility to the other, which was also quite a complication, as Elimasi had already said earlier on. The other one is eclampsia, so raised blood pressures, and that are not controlled, and those could also lead to maternal deaths, which is at about 13%.
And would those reasons be similar to the reasons there are in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole?
So the reasons are quite the same. It's just the ordering of them. I think in sub-Saharan Africa, the highest cause for maternal deaths is hemorrhage. I'm assuming that if we were to disaggregate our data into sepsis, hemorrhage would still be the number one leading cause. It's just that we lumped all our sepsis into one.
Yeah, so they're all things that need to be tackled. Now, I'm struck when I'm looking for the reasons for why it doesn't always go so well. In Wellcome's latest maternal death report, there are contradictions contained within it, which I think are interesting, that many women are receiving antenatal care, and yet warning signs of serious problems are only being detected in about a fifth of cases. And more than 90% of women are delivering in healthcare facilities, and yet infections still remain high. And Elimaze, the women are getting the care, but is it then a question of what that care looks like, whether it's as good as some of the good care that we've heard about?
Yeah, I think that's true. So the women are coming to the health facilities, like you have said. Over 95% are receiving antenatal care. Over 91% are coming to deliver at a health facility. These two things are at least enough to reduce the mortality rates of a country. But for us, you find that although we have these, we have achieved these rates, but when we compare to other countries whose rates are possibly below 50% or just above 50%, our mortality rates are very high. So now we look at the issues of the comprehensiveness of the care that they are receiving. When they come to antenatal clinic, what is it that is happening? Is it that they are checked from head to toe? Because pregnancy does affect every system of the body, every organ, as all of us may know. So you find that possibly the resources are not available, the midwives are not adequate, and even there are long queues at the health facility. Even the patients themselves, the clients, the women, they would push the midwife who is taking long to examine a woman, and then they say, but the midwife that we have today is so slow, not knowing that she's just taking her time, to make sure that she does the right things. So you find that some of the interventions that a woman is supposed to receive, they are not receiving. And because women don't know their rights, they will not ask, why didn't you check this on me? Even the blood pressure. Why didn't you check the blood pressure? Which is very crucial because it gets affected with a pregnancy and it can complicate many things. And when they come to deliver at a health facility, I think my experience is that most of the women, they come late. They don't spend like 6 hours in the hands of the midwife or any midwifery provider at a facility. What women want is that they come to a facility, they deliver. They should not spend more time in the labor ward. So that way they'll be rated as a good woman, a good wife, a good sister. She didn't spend 2 days at a facility. But that way you are being compromised of the kind of care that you require, like the monitoring that is required for the baby as well as for the woman, and then even the treatment that is required if something is going wrong.
And Linda, how much of this is down to a lack of resources, a lack of funding? Is it just that the government can't afford it and you're having to rely more on international donors?
I think some of it could be because of that, in a sense that our population in Malawi has really grown. Our fertility rate seems to be, though it's going down, but not at an admirable rate. So the resources that the country might have, considering that Malawi offers a free-paying and unpaying health services, the resources that might be available might not be adequate enough to reach out to everybody. And when you consider the Malawi budget for health, 60% of it is really dependent on the donors, which could be also erratic because the donors are going to fund dependent on their needs and interests as well. So once there's limited funding, and if the funding is also not well centralized, you find that some facilities will be better resourced and other facilities will be less resourced, and that can also affect the delivery of care.
And Elimazi, I'd be interested to know what women themselves tell you that they want. And I know your organisation has done a big study on this in 8 countries called What Women Want. It was in Nigeria, Pakistan, Mexico. 1.3 million women took part. What did women say they wanted in Malawi?
Yeah, indeed, we conducted this big study by just asking the women one question. What do you want to experience when you get to a health facility seeking for reproductive and maternal care? So they said so many things, but when we tried to bring out a top 10, we found out that most women, they want to be treated, like their number one thing, they want to be treated with respect. So they want respectful care. They want, as the providers are speaking to them, they should provide a listening ear. When they are, they should also be flexible enough to be able to tell them what they are experiencing. Actually, even for every health provider, we are taught to leave this kind of request that the women are bringing forward. But it shows that there is a gap. And they are also calling for improved water and sanitation and hygiene. They say when they get to the labor wards, even to the postnatal wards, the drainage is not good. The beds are not good. You find that they are not comfortable to remain in those facilities. They anticipate that maybe they will come out with infections. They came out okay seeking care, but sometimes they go back with some illnesses that they may have contracted right from the hospitals.
So the big question is how to provide what it is that women want, how to make the whole experience better and safer for women and for their babies. We are breaking for the BBC News now, but this is what we'll be tackling in the second part of the evidence when we focus on solutions. So thank you for the moment to my panellists with me here in Malawi, Owen Chikwaza from the Ministry of Health, Linda Nyong'o Mpando from Kamuzu University of Health Sciences, and Elimazi Kamanga-Gama from the White Ribbon Alliance in Malawi. I'm Claudia Hammond, and we'll be back after the news in a few minutes' time. Hello, I'm Claudia Hammond. Welcome back to the Evidence from the BBC. I'm in Blantyre in Malawi with the Malawi Liverpool Welcome Research Programme. And we have a live audience here to discuss the health of mothers in pregnancy and childbirth. Now, as you can imagine, this is a sizeable topic, but luckily I'm joined by three experts who are helping us to get a handle on it. Linda Nyong'o-Mapando is an Associate Professor of Health Systems and Policy at both the University of Liverpool in the UK and Kamuzu University of Health Sciences here in Malawi. Dr. Owen Chikwaza is Deputy Director of Reproductive Health Services at the Ministry of Health. And Elimaze Kamanga-Gama is a registered midwife and the Executive Director of the White Ribbon Alliance in Malawi, which is an organisation focused on ending maternal mortality. Now, later on, I'm very keen to hear from our audience too. Earlier, we talked about some of the challenges that Malawi is facing as a country while it tries to lower the number of women who face health problems or even die during pregnancy, while giving birth, or soon afterwards. So we know what some of the problems are, but now it's time to use the best evidence to consider the solutions to each of those main causes of death. And one of those is infection, so I'm going to start with that. Now, Elimaze, I was struck that your What Women Want study found that one of the things that causes infections, a lack of cleanliness, is an issue that is very much on women's minds, isn't it? So women are noticing this.
Yeah, so the infections in the health facilities, I think it is the responsibility of both the clients as well as the health workers that are working in the facility. I think we should have this kind of mindset change, but sometimes even the systems challenges, you find that the supplies that are required for cleaning the facilities are not adequate. Possibly like the chlorine that is required to kill some of infection-causing microorganisms is not available. Even the type of cleaning is not adequate. The drainage is not good. One would just want to come, deliver and go. Yet for patients like those that are high-risk patients, maybe they have had eclampsia or any other complications before, we'll tell them to come early and wait for labor and then deliver the facility. But that will not be compelling because the environment has to be motivating.
Yeah, so if you don't make it a welcoming place, people are not going to want to come.
Yes.
And I wonder whether there are policies that have been successfully put in place in other countries as a result of women raising this concern. Are there other countries where lessons could be learnt?
Yes, even in Malawi. So I think as a response to the What Women Want, there have been a lot of policies. Like in the country, we have had infection prevention practices standards put in place and also capacity building of health workers to improve the same. But we also, with the help of the Honourable Minister of Health, had to launch the respective maternity care charter that has the rights that also we are derived from What Women Want. And similarly, in 113 other countries, there have been a lot of responses, even policies being put in place.
And Linda, are things changing here in Malawi?
I think, yes, one would say things are changing because I think as MRW, we've been doing research to look at maternal sepsis and find ways, simple ways that are really quite meaningful and impactful in a country like Malawi that is low-resourced. So we've done studies before that have looked at if you implement, give women fluids, antibiotics, identify the source of infection and make sure there's good transportation for linkages and continued monitoring, that has shown to reduce the rates of infection. We have not stopped there. We're currently doing another study that is looking at so many bundles, looking at improving hand hygiene, which is quite a very simple and basic technique, improving hand hygiene and giving of antibiotics and implementing the bundle that I've just talked about fluids, antibiotics, in about 30 facilities in Malawi, so which is covering all the district hospitals in Malawi and the central hospitals, to also make sure that we are minimizing the rates of infection. When we review the data, even though the study is going on, but reviewing the data, we are seeing actually a downward slope, meaning that there's progress that is going on at the moment.
That's interesting that it is working. And so, and Owen, can it sometimes be quite simple things that make a difference?
Yeah, sure. So right now, I think it was just after they published last year the maternal death report, that at the ministry we are looking at it, and then it just opened everybody's eyes. And now I think people are looking at ways to at least make sure we reduce infections in our facilities. So it's something that as government now we are looking at. Where are we going to have a little bit of funding to make sure we put at least warm water in the maternity? And maybe to make sure the cleaning agents are available, and to make sure that everything else that we should be doing, we're doing right as government, so that we should complement the effort of everybody else to actually win this battle of infections.
Now, one thing that can cause maternal mortality is unsafe abortion. And in this country, abortion is only legal in cases where it is necessary to save the life of the woman, but not otherwise. Now, despite this, there is research that abortions, and that's almost always illegal abortions, contribute to between 6 and 18% of maternal deaths here, although it's very hard to know and very hard to measure, so these figures aren't very new. And the reason I bring this up now is that quite often it's infections that are causing the health issues or even the deaths in these cases. Owen, I wonder, from a health perspective, what measures are being recommended to deal with this issue?
Nearly all the unsafe abortions are coming from unwanted pregnancy. So to really tackle this, the first and foremost thing that we have as government is to prevent the unwanted pregnancies in the first place. So family planning, okay, maybe not. I don't like to use the word family planning. Contraception. Why I'm saying I don't like to use the word family planning is because it's very hard to get it through to the youth. So to the youth who don't have babies, when you're talking to them, what they say, how am I going to family plan when I don't have the family in the first place? So we have a situation in the country where the uptake is very high in the married and people that have already kids, they want to space. So we have high uptake for spacing, which is married people and older people who have had kids and they want to space. But we are having problems of the uptake for the ones that you'd love to actually be on contraception, so that they should wait until they finish school and they get to the right time that they should not be wanting to terminate their pregnancy. So it's very hard to make sure we get everybody on board on that sense. As a result, we continue to have the unwanted pregnancies in the background. So I think that leaves you with now to safely help them to terminate the pregnancy so that they shouldn't lose their lives or their uterus. But now the law is sitting in between the healthcare workers and the patient. On the background of that, as government, we engaged the Law Commission to ask people what they want about the law. And that was documented in the Termination of Pregnancy Bill. And it was sent to Parliament. I mean, not Parliament, it went to Cabinet. So it was approved at the level of Cabinet. And the second step is for it to go to Parliament. So now we're having trouble to get someone to present it in Parliament. So right now, we actually don't have funding. If we had like a lot of funding now, what we think we should be doing is to educate the community, because whatever is contained in the bill was not dreamed in the office. People actually went, Sanjay Tuchitipa, to ask the communities to tell us what they want. And what is in the bill is what they want. It's just that we've just noted that people actually don't know what is in the bill. So we think if we could have like funding now is to make sure we make the community awareness that people should know what we have summarized in the bill. And then they should use that to push their parliamentarians to table it in parliament, to pass it in through parliament. Because what the current law is doing is not to stop the pregnancies. The termination of pregnancies. It is just segregating people along the poverty lines. Because even with the current law, the ones that can afford, that are rich, for whatever reason, they have a way of finding some clinicians to get it safer. But the ones that can't afford are the only ones that are dying. In my practice, I have not seen one rich person coming with an unsafe abortion.
So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what does happen with that bill. Yeah. Now, I want to turn to sepsis now, because we've mentioned it before, and it's when a dangerous chain of infection spreads throughout the body. Now, I know, Linda, that studies have found that the sepsis treatments that are used in high-income countries aren't always going to work in low- and middle-income countries because, as we've heard, the resources often aren't there. Linda, are there any treatments for sepsis that have been trialled that feel as though they might be appropriate for countries like Malawi?
Yes, I think for countries like Malawi, the first aim bundle, which looks at fluids, antibiotics, identifying the source of that infection and making sure there's transportation in the event that they need to be referred to a higher level hospital, as well as monitoring, those have shown to help. So looking at a bundle of interventions and not just limiting to just one particular aspect. And these are really using resources that are readily available within a country like Malawi, so that we have got treatment and bundles that work for under-resourced country like ours.
And the second leading cause of deaths in pregnancy or childbirth or afterwards in Malawi is hemorrhage, as we've said, uncontrolled bleeding. And in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole, this is the leading cause of death. And I know that young girls between the ages of, say, 10 and 19 are at particular risk of hemorrhage. Linda, why are girls at more risk if they're young than when they're older?
So if somebody is young, possibly that would be a case of an unwanted pregnancy that would be at play. So one, they might not even show up for antenatal care attendance, so they would not have received the care that they should have been receiving. And then at point of delivery, they are more likely to come in also quite a little bit late, which is also quite a problem. Plus their biological makeup, maybe they're not yet fully mature enough to handle childbirth. So when you look at the biological makeup and then the social determinants to pregnancy in underaged, those put them at a greater risk for that.
And we've already talked about what difference it might make if the young girls were able to get the contraception so that they don't become pregnant when they don't want to. But Elamazi, what else can be done? What would you like to see done to help those young girls who are pregnant?
Yeah, so to the young girls, once they are pregnant, I think we begin to treat them like any other pregnant woman. I think at this point in time, we really need to treat them as still young girls, because just like Linda has said, their biological makeup, it puts them at a greater risk of complications. And later on, we are seeing a lot of them, more than 29%, dying due to pregnancy-related complications.
Now, I've been presenting global health programs for a long time on the BBC World Service. And when it comes to uncontrolled bleeding, there is one drug in particular over the years which many people I've interviewed have been very enthusiastic about. And it's a medicine that can help the blood to clot. It is called tranexamic acid. It is often low cost. It has saved masses of people's lives after, say, serious road accidents. And it has been trialled for hemorrhaging during childbirth as well. And Owen, I was wondering, what have trials found in low resource settings? And is this something that is available here?
Yeah, so tranexamic acid is a known drug that you've put it right that it's shown that it actually helps to reduce bleeding, and as a country we have adopted that, but the problem is now the availability. The experts have noted that it's a very useful drug and it's been put in all the guidelines, but we had not updated it on the essential drug list, but because it is there in most guidelines now, we're trying to use all the levels to make sure we put it on the essential drug list and to make sure that this drug starts being procured.
Now, the last leading cause of maternal mortality that we want to discuss is preeclampsia, where there can be high blood pressure and swelling, which can then be followed by eclampsia, where there are seizures and even comas. Linda, I wonder what sort of care women would get in hospital if they have preeclampsia or even eclampsia.
I think I would like to defer that to Owen in terms of like what sort of care they would get, but I would like to respond it from in terms of like what we're doing at Malawi Liverpool Wellcome Trust in terms of research towards that. So we're rolling out a study that we want to improve the quality of antenatal care. And we realize that for one to be able to diagnose that somebody has got high blood pressure, it means you need to have a functional blood pressure machine, which is not the case in all facilities in Malawi.
or you might have a functional blood pressure machine, but it might be missing out on accessories, say things like batteries to run it off. So in that program, what we're intending to do is to make sure that we are able to uplift the baseline of every facility that we're going to work in. Unfortunately, it will be limited to the facilities that we're working in, so that we have facilities that are better resourced and are able to see if we constantly monitor blood pressure, are we able to diagnose early so that it prompts early treatment. But I think as for treatment, then Owen would be able to respond to that.
Yeah, so I think briefly, I would say that the treatment for preeclampsia is actually delivery. I think the issue has always been, now you have a baby who is not mature and you still want to buy time, but life's mother is number one in pregnancy. So you not want to prolong pregnancy, that is going to hurt the mother.
And so as we've heard, the ideal is to spot it early so that you can catch it before it develops into eclampsia, which is so serious. So at this point, I want to turn to a guest we have with us in our audience, Senior Chief Kapeni, who is the traditional leader of the Kapeni region in Blantyre. Thank you so much for coming. I was wondering, sir, if I could ask you, what role do you think traditional leaders like yourself play in helping to improve maternal health and maybe for women to have care earlier and sooner in their pregnancies?
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. If we had the means, we would appreciate to have healthy facilities closer to the people. Something functional that will, first of all, teach the ladies when they come there, or sensitize them, as you say, how they need to look after their pregnancy, where to go, how early to get there. So I would say that would be the number one remedy, the transportation network. If that could be improved, and I think the professor or madam there mentioned roads. We don't have roads in our areas, in the rural communities. Maybe we have tracks or something similar to a road. If you have to go there, you need a size 16 tire to negotiate the bumps and the holes. And so that's a big constraint. If we had transport, that would really enable those that need to help to get there in time and get the pregnant women to a facility that will assist them.
Is this something, sir, that you have been advocating for personally yourself?
Very, very much, 101%. There are lapses in the systems that I feel if they were looked into and maybe if they were corrected, we could save a lot more lives than we are. Yeah, let me stop there.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us there. And so it's a...
Clapping. Can you tell the people how to clap?
Yeah, this is how we clap.
Am I doing that right? Like that? One hand on top of the other, like that. Thank you for that. So it sounds as though all sorts of solutions are needed, from roads to making sure that care is close to women, to better antenatal care and plans to deal with sepsis, to more access to contraception, to drugs which can stop bleeding. But now it is time for the rest of you in the audience here with me in Blantyre to ask your questions. I mean, all of us know women who've had problems during pregnancy or childbirth, and it sounds as though giving the women the power over their own care, treating them with respect, makes a difference. So I'm sure there will be things you want to know. Don't be shy. Anything you want to ask, the experts are here. Yes, there are somebody over here and over here. They are our first two.
Okay, I'm Edna Umali. I'm a member of Patients and Public Involvement. As a member of this group, I've learned that sometimes the delays happen in the hospitals. And we come with an issue of a patient who comes as a referral from another hospital and is coming from the referral. It shows that she has to undergo CESAR. And when she comes to the central hospital, they put the patient on a line, on a queue. You find that this person might be there for 2 days without being attended to in the hospital. And in the end, that person to have sepsis. And we, as the public, we are concerned about this. What is the Minister of Health doing about this?
Owen.
Yeah, so she's actually right. I also work at the hospital, and the situation that she described is correct. It's not strange. It happens at Queen's. It happens at Kamu Central Hospital, and I'm very sure it is happening at most hospitals. So this is a resource issue. For example, you'd have, say, at my hospital, only 2 theaters. So 2 theaters can only do so much. But I think the bottom line, the key thing is communication.
Is there any sign, though, that things will improve? Might there be another operating theatre?
Yeah, so right now we're still discussing. There are people that have showed interest to improve the maternal mortality. In the country, there are few donors that we are discussing with that we could improve the infrastructure of the maternal services in the country. But I don't want to start promising things that we already don't have. But I think the key thing that I see in all this is not this problem, but is communication. Sometimes us as clinicians, we don't communicate well. We don't communicate well with the patient to actually know the situation we are in and why we are in this situation.
Thank you for that. Time now for another question from the audience. Yes, there's one just there.
No, thank you very much. I like these programs because I get to ask a question to Senior Chief and I won't be reprimanded. Senior Chief Kaveni, I come in from an academic background where we say education is the best contraceptive, and we've got many of the girl child that come to university, they delay their pregnancies. I just want to find out from you, Senior Chief, to say what can we do to maintain this girl child in school so that we don't be discussing these adolescent pregnancies and its complications that come along. Thank you.
Thank you. Senior Chief?
I think we have education in our communities, rural areas, where parents send their children to school to attend to a certain level of education. But instances that we have encountered include dire poverty has been one of the things that have forced small little girls to run away from school and get married in order to get away from that poverty situation. We've had such cases in our areas. So poverty is one thing. And again, when it comes to extreme cases, sometimes because a parent did not attend an education, and so they're not very much persuaded to understand the importance of education. They don't push the children to go and remain in school. At the same degree, some other parent would, if that parent were educated. So these factors sometimes contribute to the little girls either showing interest going to school or not. And so we have these cases occurring. I don't know whether that helps.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you, sir. And there's somebody with a question right at the back. You've been waiting very patiently there. Thank you.
Yeah, so for me, I just want to find out from you. Traditional birth attendance,
What's happening? Because they used to reduce the numbers of women in hospitals. You're taking off high numbers now. What's the stake now? Because if they are trained enough, they should be able to live when their things are complicated. So can you talk something about that?
Linda, is traditional birth attendance something you know about the research on?
I think in terms of research, yes. It's a policy matter at the moment in Malawi. But in terms of research, yes, I think at one point in time, the School of Midwifery would use them as part of the training to train midwives. But at the same time, needed to have severe cases of morbidity and mortalities coming in from traditional birth attendants. So there's that striking balance. But I know for sure that it's a policy issue within Malawi.
Well, thank you so much for that. This has been absolutely fascinating. I have learnt so much, and I hope that you have too. I want to thank our panel, Linda Mapando from Kamuzu University of Health Sciences, Owen Chikwaza from the Ministry of Health, and Elamazi Kamanga Gama from the White Ribbon Alliance in Malawi. And thank you to the Malawi Liverpool Welcome Programme for hosting us here in Blantyre today. The evidence is produced in collaboration with Welcome Collection, and the producer of the evidence is Margaret Sessa Hawkins, and our studio engineers are Andrew Saunderson and David Spruill. A big thank you to all of you in the audience for coming. I'm Claudia Hammond, and I'll have more for you on global health every week on the BBC World Service with Health Check. Bye for now.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, five mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed. But whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
Five women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in this environment.
Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.